walk alone. Yeah! Cause I'm on the road. On the road. To recovery. Step by step. Step by step. Step by step. I'm on the road. To recovery. Trust in God. Along the way. Trust in God along the way. Trust in God all the way.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Roy. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all your devices that make noise or might well distract others. Silence your cell phones. Put them on vibrate. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everyone ready? Okay, let's start the meditation. From the Big Book, page 17, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Now, normally I would have asked a friend to read Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is. But instead of asking him, I decided I'm going to surprise him, because not only has he had his own spiritual experience, but he's taken a lot of other guys and helped them to have theirs as well. So please welcome Zach, who's getting a 4-year medallion tonight. Yeah.
Recovered alcoholic named Zach. This is Spiritual Experience, Appendix 2 from the Big Book. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in the few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer. I want to thank the group for this medallion, and wasn't expecting to be up here doing this tonight, but these last 4 years have been the best 4 years of my life. And, you know, if you're new and just coming in, get a sponsor, go through the steps. The spiritual experience is what it's all about, and help others. That's all I got.
Congratulations again to Zach. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode, or just turn them off. Tonight we got Tom doing his 11th session with us, which has been exciting every week thus far. It's brutal honesty. He's completely vulnerable up here and just tells you how it is, and that's what I needed. I needed somebody to tell me how it was. I didn't need somebody to sugarcoat things. I didn't need somebody to pat me on my back or wipe my nose. You know, I threw a pity party my whole life, so I needed somebody to give it to me raw. And that's what I think I love the most about when Tom comes up here. He gives it to you raw, you know. So with that, help me welcome Tom.
How's everybody doing tonight? Put my hat on so I can see you, you know. That bright light shining in my eyes. Mike told me tonight, he says, you got a year and to get your retinas right. I said, I might have to have a cataract operation after this, you know. You know, it's like staring into the sun up here, you know. So, 11th step, huh? Sought through prayer and meditation. I was reading one of Father John Doe's golden books, and at the start of the chapter, it said, life's purpose is to purify us, not to satisfy us. No, that's kind of hard to swallow. Well, like a friend of mine who's long gone now, he used to say, it's hard to live a righteous life in an unrighteous world. Because this is an unrighteous world. A world that tells me all the time, all I got to do is go out in the car and turn the radio on. All I got to do is get in my house and turn on the TV. All I got to do is pick up the newspaper. All I got to do is look around me at this world and what it says to me. It says the same thing to me that my alcoholism says to me. That I can fix the outside and it'll fix the inside. All my life I went around trying to fix the outside of me. Thinking that if I could just get everything right, if I could just have everything my way, if people would just do what I want them to do, then my life would be okay. Or, like I like to say, I had a big hole in my soul. And what I did with that hole was I just kept trying to fill it. I kept trying to put drugs and alcohol and people and places and things in that hole, thinking that I would finally get to a place where that hole was filled. And I don't care how much I put in that hole, I couldn't ever fill it. I never had enough of nothing. My middle name ought to be Moore. Tom Moore, that ought to be my name. Because if it was good, or if it felt good, or if it feels good, or if it tastes good, I want more of it. That's why I said, you can't even keep brown sugar in the house, because I'll eat it by the spoonful. You know, it reminds me of the old blues song, whole world's fighting about a spoonful. You know, a spoonful of this, a spoonful of that. Thinking that, you know, if I could just have it, I'll be okay. What I had to learn was that that hole can't be filled. I don't care how much you put in it, you can't fill it. But that hole can be healed. And only God makes that possible. You know, like an old friend of mine likes to say about AA, you know, the bad news is that this is all about God. And the good news is that this is all about God. Oh yeah, I mean, we got lots of atheists in AA. They even got atheist meetings. And they take wherever you see God in these steps, and they take God out of that, and they put in their spiritual principles. So even atheists at the atheist AA meetings have got a higher power. Their higher power is spiritual principles. And you can get the where and when, and you can look at all the meetings, but I'm afraid you're only going to find maybe one atheist meeting once a week, and there ain't too many people there. So the bad news for you if you're an atheist tonight is, this is all about God. Because that's what I'm going to talk about. You know, my God comes to me. I don't have to search him out. My God comes to me, and all I have to do is make myself open to my God. And I do that, you know, by seeking him in prayer and meditation. This is the little red book. And I like it because it kind of breaks it down, breaks the steps down. This step can be broken down into three parts. This is a three-part step. The first part is prayer. A prayer for improved contact with God, for knowledge of His will, for mental, physical, and spiritual energy to carry it out. Requires the coordinated effort of all our faculties. Knowledge of the need of this step is based on the past experience of AA members, some of whom have demonstrated the ability to forget that they have not been cured of alcoholism. They have mistaken recovery for cure. Well, like my sponsor used to tell me, you know what, Tom, in here we don't have any report cards and you're not going to graduate. This is a day at a time. A day at a time. So I'm sober today. And I need to do what it takes for me to be sober today. I learned that if you've been with me this whole time, you heard that when we started this step series, that I had to get on my knees and ask God for the strength to stay clean and sober. In the beginning, in Alcoholics Anonymous, before the big book was written in 1939, what do you think they did for those years between 35 and 39? What book were they using? They were using the Bible. Before they even brought you in the meeting, you got down on your knees and you surrendered. You know, I'm going to tell you a funny thing is, if you haven't been sitting here with me through this time, then you haven't heard that I spent years going in and out of here. I wouldn't pray. I wanted nothing to do with prayer. I wanted nothing to do with God. You could keep your God. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous for one reason, because I was in trouble. That's the only reason I came here. I stopped because I was in a jackpot. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous the first time. It helped me get out of the jackpot. Once I got out of the jackpot and I got back everything, then I didn't need to hang around AA anymore. You see, I had determined when I came here that, you know, okay, I got a problem with alcohol. I don't drink. I don't have any problem. Case closed. I don't need prayer. I don't need a sponsor. I don't need the steps. I don't need the book. I don't need to do any of that. I just need to not drink. And I don't have any problem. Case closed. And I spent years going in and out, until I got to the place where I no longer could stop anymore. Didn't matter how much trouble I was in. Didn't matter. Didn't matter. And I come out of the VA hospital, and I went to walk into the old center house after spending 2 months in the VA hospital, and a man stepped in my way. And he said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to the meeting." He said, "You don't want to get sober." I said, "Hell, I haven't had a drink for 2 months. I'm sober." He says, "Oh, no. That's not sober. You just haven't had a drink for 2 months because you've been locked up and they had you on ANA abuse. That's easy. Well, what are you going to do now?" And I said, "Well, what do you want me to do?" He said, "All I want you to do is what I've been trying to tell you for years to do." I said, "Oh, yeah, what's that?" And he said, "Get on your knees and ask God for the strength to stay clean and sober." And I said, "Well, I don't see how that's going to do anything." And he looked me in the eye and he said, "Well, how's your way been working, wise guy? How's your way been working for you? So what are you going to say after spending 10 years going in and out of AA? That your way works for you? No, you're not going to say that. You know what you're going to say? You're going to say what I said. Well, I guess you're right. I wouldn't even say you're right. Well, I guess you're right." And then he looked at me and he said, "Well, then I guess what you believe in doesn't work, does it?" "I guess what you believe in doesn't work." I said, "Well, maybe you're right. And he said, well, you know, I'm not asking you to believe. This isn't about what you're going to believe. This is about what are you willing to do. Are you just willing to get on your knees and ask God for the strength to stay clean and sober? And try to be sincere? I said, yeah, I'm willing to do that. He gave me an out, see? He told me that I did not have to believe. I just needed to do the act. Or maybe what you hear in meetings, act as if. But this is about surrender. I have to surrender my will. This is what these first three steps are talking about. I can't, he can, so I think I'll let him. 1, 2, 3. So prayer is how we start. Surrender through prayer. Through me asking God for the strength to stay clean and sober. I live with the obsession of drinking and use for months. And then one day it came to me. Then I no longer was thinking about taking a drink or a drug. And the obsession that I had from the time I first picked up a drink when I was 13 years old was gone. It was gone. And I realized, because I did what I didn't believe in, that my God loved me and that he had taken the obsession for me to drink and to use away. And I came to believe. The next step is to make a decision and turn your life and your will over to the care of this God. That means that I'm no longer in the outcome business. I'm out of the outcome business. God's in the outcome business. You know, a lot of people, you know, we talk about in the step, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us. And people tell me all the time, well, I don't know what God's will is for me. Well, you know, I know what God's will is for me. God's will for me is to be happy, joyous, and free. Because my God loves me. But I had to get rid of my old God. That happened way back here in the beginning. When I came to believe, when I knew that my God loved me, from removing the obsession from me to drink and to use, I knew that my God loved me. That my God loved me and he wants me to be free from this. When I make a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God, I want freedom. Freedom from the bondage of self. Because that's what my alcoholism has put me in my whole life. It's put me in self-bondage. I am so consumed with self, like I say, I don't know who you think about all day, but I know who I think about. I think about me. I wake up in the morning thinking about me, and I go to bed at night thinking about me. And the only time I think about you is how it relates to me. I don't think about you. That's unnatural for me to be that way. What my alcoholic mind is telling me all the time is that, oh, well, if I get the next shiny thing, everything's going to be all right. And that's why it's hard to live a righteous life in an unrighteous world. Because this world is about that. This world is constantly trying to feed me with just get more. Just get more. Just get it right. Get more money. Get more things. Get more toys. You know? It's got me tagged into a screen. Let me look at my phone all the time. I sit in meetings and I watch people shopping on their phone. Buying stuff
that they don't need to impress people they don't even like. The fact that we have no desire or intention to ever drink again is a favorable frame of mind for the new member to hold. It is our ambition, a mental condition to be grateful for, but one that often, too often, fosters complacency, which can lead us into trouble unless God is given proper credit for the sobriety we enjoy. I need to make that a part of me on a daily basis. You heard the saying, you know, stick with the basics. You don't have to go back to them. That means that these basics are things that I do every day. I don't stop praying. You think because the obsession was taken from me all those years ago? I haven't had a drink or a drug in 33 years. Do you know where I was this morning? On my knees, asking God for the strength today to stay clean and sober. Because, you know, yesterday's sobriety is not going to keep me sober today. Yesterday's booze ain't getting me drunk today. And yesterday's sobriety is not keeping me sober today. I have to ask myself on a daily basis, what am I going to do today to stay sober? And the basic things that I learned in the very beginning that got me sober are the things that keep me sober. And I don't stop doing them. Why? Because I don't think about drinking? I haven't thought about drinking in years. Years. I'm not obsessed with that. No, once I was no longer obsessed with drinking, I started becoming obsessed with everything else. That's what addiction does to you. We put away the drugs and the alcohol, and then right away, we start becoming obsessed with other things. Things that we think that are going to make us feel good. In reality, we are on a daily reprieve. And that reprieve is contingent upon my spiritual condition. Contingent upon my spiritual condition. We need endless experience in the practice of unselfish prayer to balance the spiritual debits that alcoholism has charged us with. We hear about people meditating. We meditated tonight. We had meditation. You know, I'm not the greatest meditator in the world. Okay? When I was getting sober, I used to go with people to meditation sessions, you know, and they'd put on the soft music like we had tonight, and they'd sit there and they'd say, "Om, Om," you know. And I'd be falling asleep. And I says to myself, you know, I'm just a loser, man. I can't get this meditation stuff. I don't know what it is. You know, and I just think that I can't do this. I can't do this right. And so I went to a good friend of mine, a mentor who'd been in AA for years, and I told him about how I just can't seem to get this meditation thing. And he asked me, he said, "Well, do you read the 24-hour-a-day book?" You know, I mean, AA has its own daily book, but a lot of people that have been sober a long time, AA's only had that daily meditation book about 15 years. So for us that have been sober for a long time, we were given the 24-hour-a-day book, which was written by a man from the Oxford Group, which is where Alcoholics Anonymous comes from, a Christian organization. And I says, "Yeah, I read the 24-hour-a-day book every morning." And I said, "Yeah, sure, every morning." And he said, "Well, when do you read it?" I said, "Well, it's on, I keep it in the bathroom. I read it when I'm in the bathroom, on the toilet." He says, and then he says, you read the meditation for the day in that 24-hour day book? And I go, yeah. He says, and do you sit there and think about the meditation for the day that you read? And I said, yeah. He said, then you're meditating. You see, I'm the type of person that, because my mind goes all the time, I need something to meditate upon. Because I've got alcoholism, and I got alcoholic thoughts going on all the time in my head. Like I told you, I don't know who you think about all day. So I need literature. Literature is one of the greatest things that I have. And I use literature. The big book, the 12 and 12. Father John Doe that I've been bringing to you. This book is a book that was given to us, you know, years ago. Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount. And believe me, you know, look, spirituality is spirituality. I don't care where I get spirituality from. Okay? But I need to meditate upon this, not meditate upon Playboy. Or not meditate upon, you know, the internet and constantly, you know, showing me things I should buy. There's a little book that's called As a Man Thinketh. And so as a man thinketh, or as a woman thinketh, you will bring about. If you're going to go around all day thinking about negative crap, then that's what you're going to bring in your life. Negative crap. So that's real spiritual. What it is practical. It's the way that my alcoholic mind works. Because I don't care that I've got 33 years sober. Guess what? My first thought's always an alcoholic thought. And then I take the what I've been taught spiritually and I apply that. I'm driving here tonight. It took me an hour to drive here from Pompano. On 95, it's like a parking lot. Do you know how bad I want, you know, my alcoholic self wants to just rage. Because I'm a rageaholic. It wants me to rage. So what do I do to stop from raging? Because you know what? I don't like that feeling. I don't want to feel that way. You know, we can have an emotional hangover. I don't need booze and drugs to give me a hangover. I can have a hangover today from my alcoholism called an emotional hangover. And it's because I fill myself full of negativity instead of positive, spiritual things to meditate upon, to seek a more conscious contact with my God. And so I'm praying, God help me. Help me. I learned that from Emmett Fox. If you, any, like I talked about in previous step series meetings, anybody that's troubled, go to the Golden Key. Look it up on the internet. Just put in Emmett Fox, the Golden Key. It's a very simple thing. Emmett Fox was a believer in scientific prayer. Bill became very good friends with Emmett Fox. Because Emmett Fox was in the same building that Bill was in. And they became friends. I had a young Jewish fellow who wanted me to help him. He'd had trouble. And I said, okay. I said, well, I want you to get a copy of Sermon on the Mount. And 2 weeks later, he called me. He goes, that book's driving me crazy. I go, why is the book driving you crazy? Because I'm a Jew. And all I see is Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ. I said, I haven't got you reading the book to learn about Jesus Christ. It's not about that. It's about the messenger. Not the messenger, the message. And if you're gonna look at the messenger instead of the message, you're always going to have a problem. It's not about the messenger. It's about the message. It could be a Buddhist, a rabbi, a Hindu, a Muslim, a Catholic priest. It wouldn't matter to me. You can go in history, you can look at every civilization that's ever existed. I don't care how far back in the jungle they were. They all have the same thing. The idea of a deity, of a higher power, of a god, or gods. Even the pagans believed in gods. So who am I going to go to? Self? Let me tell you, self can't help self to get out of self. I stopped for years, but I never stayed stopped. Because I always had the obsession of drinking to use. Until I got on my knees and asked God for the strength to stay clean and sober. And it was removed from me. And I came to believe. So I'm a believer in God. My God, as I understand Him, is a God of love. In AA, we say the Our Father after every meeting. But you know, I just mouthed words for years. And I was raised a Catholic. I don't think I ever really looked at what the breakdown and the meaning of the Our Father is all about. And the Our Father is a great prayer. You know? And Christ gave us that prayer in the Sermon on the Mount. And He taught us to say the Our Father. And Emmett Fox does a great job of breaking down the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, just the Our Father part, what does it mean that we're the offspring? That we're the same nature as the parent. And so since God is divine spirit, man must essentially be divine spirit too. Whatever appearances may say to the contrary. God exists, and the eternal, all-powerful, all-present God is the loving Father of mankind. That's why when I pray, I say Father. I had to get rid of my punishing God. I had this screwed up idea that God, you know, had it out for me. That God screwed me. So I was a victim. I like playing the victim. Because when you play the victim, then you can be full of self-pity and be full of justifiable anger. And that's what my alcoholism wants. That's going to help keep me sick. So Alcoholics Anonymous is a way of getting spiritually well. Because you see, I come here, I was a very, very spiritually sick person when I come here. And so I learned to pray my Father. Because I learned that He loved me. And so I look at God as my Father. I say, my Father, give me the strength to stay clean and sober today. Take my life and my will upon your care. Do with me as thou wilt. Thy will be done in my life and through my life. Thy will be done. That's all I say. That's all I was taught to say. I was taught God doesn't need me to tell Him what to do. He's God and I'm not. If I'm going to make a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God, then that must mean that I trust my God. Does He need me to tell Him? No, because I'll be honest with you. I don't know what I need, see? All I'm capable of knowing is what I want. Only God knows what I need. And my third step tells me that if I turn my life and my will over to the care of God, and I perform His work well, which is living this way of life, taking next action, then I'll be provided with everything I need. And that's what's happened. For the past 33 years, I have been given everything that I needed. Not what I wanted. Thank God I didn't get what I wanted. Because what I wanted was nothing compared to what my God has given me. And I'm grateful. I have a grateful heart. Every day I go into every day with an attitude of gratitude. Because I was taught that an alcoholic that has an attitude of gratitude will never drink. You can try it. Try going around all day ungrateful. Looking at everybody. Looking at the world through shit-colored glasses. That's the way I looked at the world my whole life. Everything was about beating down the other guy. Getting on top. Getting what you want. Screw them before they screw you. That's how I looked at the world and how I thought the world was. And what was the result of that? The result of that was my alcoholism and my spiritual sickness. I sat around for years, bad-mouthing everybody, looking down my nose at other people. I was a low-bottom snob. I hated rich folks. I used to have a little buddy, you know, back in the old days when Las Olas was not a nice neighborhood over there on the other side of the river. When it was nasty. It was Skid Row. Back 40 years ago. I had a little buddy who was named Tommy Horgan, who was a carny. And we used to walk up to the strip. He liked to go up to the strip and get some pizza. And we stopped, you know, had to walk through the rich neighborhoods over there. We stopped in front of the rich folks' house. And he says, "You see these rich folks that are living in this house, Tom?" And I go, "Yeah, what about them?" He says, "There's folks living in these houses that are living on Skid Row." And I said, "What the hell are you talking about? Rich bastards. They got everything." He said, "Oh no, Tom. The Skid Row they're living on is in their minds." What we like to call homesick for the gutter. It's real easy to stop drinking in this program and get homesick for the gutter. Be cruising up and down Federal Highway looking for the girls. Oh, yeah. I know what the guys do. See, I work with the guys. I know what we do. I know what I get. I know how I was. Our Father, which art in heaven. Here, heaven stands for God, our cause, because in religious phraseology, heaven is the term for the presence of God. In metaphysics, it is called the absolute, because it is the realm of pure, unconditioned being. The word earth means manifestation, and man's function is to manifest or express God, our cause. In other words, God is the infinite and perfect cause of all things. But cause has to be expressed, and God expresses himself by means of man. Man's destiny is to express God in all sorts of glorious and wondrous ways. When did my life get good? My life got good when I started to do that, when I started to express God in all sorts of glorious and wondrous ways. When I praise my God. When I talk about my God, how my God loved me. How my God changed me. How my God took away the obsession for me to drink and to use. How he gave me this life that I'm grateful for. He brings me here to stand up here. You think I'm here for you? I'm not here for you. I'm here for me. Because I need to do this. This is what this being a selfish program means. That I'm selfish about staying sober. That I'm selfish about being unselfish by practicing that. Because I have to practice my program. If I don't practice my program, I'm not going to stay in fit spiritual condition. And I don't like the emotional hangovers. And I don't want to go backwards. Because there's no sitting still here. Either you're going backwards towards a drink, or you're going forwards closer to your God. Hallowed be thy name. Hallowed be thy name means thy nature is altogether good. That God is altogether good. If you think that God has sent any of your difficulties to you, for no matter how good a reason, you are given power to your troubles. And this makes it very difficult to get rid of them. Oh, I know that. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in heaven, in earth as it is in heaven. Thy kingdom come means that it is our duty to be ever occupied in helping to establish the kingdom of God on earth. God has a plan for every man, and he has one for you. God has glorious and wonderful plans for every one of us. He has planned a splendid career full of interest, life, and joy for each. And if our lives are dull or restricted or squalid, that's not his fault, it's ours. Our fault. Because why? I don't want to pick up the spiritual kit of tools that are laid at my feet through the program Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a philosophy of life. It's a way for me to live. By practice, practice, practice. I'm a naturally selfish, self-centered, egotistical maniac. That's what I am naturally. An egomaniac with an inferiority complex who can't stop thinking about me. And so I have to practice a way of life that gets me out of me. There's a true place in life for each one of us, upon the attainment of which we shall be completely happy and perfectly secure. On the other hand, until we do find our true place, we never shall be either happy or secure, no matter what other things we may have. Our true place is the one place where we can bring the kingdom of God into manifestation and truly say, "Thy kingdom come." We have seen that man too often chooses to use his free will in a negative way. You think I do God's will? I don't do God's will. I do my will. God gave me free will. One of my pet peeves is to hear you sit in a meeting and say, "I took my will back." No, you had your will all along. You didn't take it back. I'm not doing God's will. I'm doing my will. My job is to align my will with God's will. This is the proper use of the will, as it talks about in the Big Book. That's the proper use of the will. To work this program in all my... To practice, we're going to talk about that next week. To practice these principles in all my affairs. Not just in a couple of my affairs, but in all my affairs. You know, I learned to let go of just about everything in my life by about 4.5 years sober. You know. You see, I'm going to tell you something about me. I ain't never changed out of virtue, okay? I'm not a virtuous person. I've only changed out of pain. It was the pain of my alcoholism that got me sober. And it's only been through emotional turmoil and sobriety that I have come to serenity. Peace of mind. That I'm okay with myself. I'm okay with me and I'm okay with the world. And I'm a happy man. I may stand up here and rant and rave, but I'm going to tell you, there ain't nothing really much that bothers me. Not when I turn my life and my will over to the care of my God. not when I remind myself that I'm not in the outcome business, that God is, that I'm only in the action business. And all I need to do is take the action of keeping myself spiritually fit. But the last thing that I was holding on to, of course, was my relationship with a woman. And I had this girlfriend, and she just wouldn't do what I wanted her to do. And if she would have done what I wanted her to do, life would have been wonderful. I'd have been happy and she'd have been happy and it would have been a happy life. But she didn't want to do that. And it was just bugging the hell out of me. And it was driving me crazy. Because I couldn't control her. See, because that's my problem. Is I'm a control freak. See, I want power over you. I want power over people, places, and things. If I think that that's going to make me happy, then I need power over it. And so, I had this man I called my spiritual sponsor after this incident. He became my 11-step sponsor. He was a real quiet, easygoing man. Very unlike me, but I've always been drawn to quiet, easygoing people, you know, because of a desire to be more like that. You know, and he was very serene and had been sober for many, many years, about 40-some years. He was about 80. Irish Catholic, like me, he used to get up every morning, go to Mass, go to the noon meeting at the Central House. Then he'd go home, he'd take a nap. And before dinner, he'd get up and come to Denny's. And I used to live in two rooms alongside the tracks, a couple blocks behind Denny's in Boynton on Federal Highway. And I'd come in from work and sit and talk with him while he was having coffee. And so I came in and I sat down next to him, you know, and I started to tell him about how I had this girl, you know, this girl I had. She 2 years I've been going with her, you know, she just won't do the right thing, you know. You know, I was going on and on, whining. And I was expecting him to do one of two things. That he was either going to feel sorry for me and put his arm around me and tell me, "It's okay, Tom." Or he was going to kick me in the ass and tell me to stop feeling sorry for myself. And he put his coffee down and he turned and he looked me in the eye. And he didn't say either one of those things. He said, "Tom, let me ask you something." He said, "Did you ever think of asking God to do anything for anybody but you?" And I got a big dose of reality at that moment. You see, because I realized something about me. The truth was, I never had. I'd never asked God to do a damn thing for anybody but me. I came to an understanding of the depth of my selfishness. That I had never even asked God to help my parents do anything for them. That all I'd ever asked for is me, 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 me. And he reached into his wallet and he pulled out a holy card like that, you know. He had a few of them in there. I haven't got one because I gave them all away. I always do. I end up buying them 20 at a time. It was a holy card of St. Francis. He turned it around and he said, "You see this prayer?" He said, "I suggest you take this prayer and start to incorporate it into your prayer life on a daily basis." Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. And where there is sadness, joy. O divine master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console. To be understood as to understand. To be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned. And it's in dying that we are born to eternal life. Now, St. Francis was not talking about dying and putting in the grave. He was talking about dying to the old way of life. The life of selfishness and self-centeredness. And if you think that it isn't better to understand, to be the one who understands, than to be the one who needs to be understood. If you think that it's not better to be the one who needs to be consoled than to be the one who consoles. If you think that it's not better to be the one who forgives than the one who needs to be forgiven. And if you think that it's not better to be the one who loves than the one who needs to be loved, you need to work on yourself. And that's what this is about. This way of life is about working on me. It's not about working on you. You see, because I can't get anybody sober. Nobody got me sober. I'm sober by the mercy of God. And I stay sober by the grace of God. I didn't get justice. I got mercy. If I'd have got justice, I'd still be in the penitentiary. And I get God's grace. And you know what God's grace is? God's grace is His unmerited love. Because I don't merit God's love. But God gives it to me. And I fail all the time. But my failures glorify my God. Because my God loves me anyway. He has infinite love. Totally unconditional, infinite love for me. Love that's beyond the understanding of the human mind. Because we live in three dimensions. And in the big book where they talk about the central fact of our lives and being rocketed into that fourth dimension, that's where God exists, in that fourth dimension, in a different place. And I'll tell you what, brothers and sisters, this is a good life. I wouldn't want it any other way. I'm a satisfied customer. Thanks for letting me share tonight.
Let's give Tom a hand one more time. Tonight I've got John, the secretary, coming up.
Hey family, my name is John and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Larry to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
My name is Larry. I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Larry.
Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. that presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would not be able to drink. We would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered. Thank you.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship from Ford to second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to His loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Could I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And anyone in need of a sponsor, if you could please raise your hand. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the Big Book study starts at 7:15. It's upstairs on the third floor of this building. We have large print Big Books and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. We ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week. Thanks.
Meeting's not over yet. We have tonight's session and all past speakers' podcast online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to a Monday night Big Book study, and those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen. See you all Monday.
Stronger. halfway house and paid for
my favorite.
Mike. That would be very hard.